Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
But to get the lowdown on everything, we head out to the fan hotline, covering the team for Cleveland.com. Frequent guest of the show, going to be with us every single Friday moving forward in the football season. It's Coach Riz, Lance Reisland. Lance, what's going on?
What's going on, Jake? Happy Friday, my friend.
Happy Friday. It's always good. I mean, it doesn't feel quite like regular season Friday heading into a Sunday, but we're getting there. We're getting real close and starting to get a little bit more more excited to get to those moments.
I'll tell you what, being out in Philly, it was hot. It was intense. Those, they were getting after both teams. Obviously, Philly's really good, but it kind of felt like football season and for sure getting started here.
Lance, I got to ask you just right off the rip. We had talked to Dan Lobby earlier this week as well, but did you feel like the Browns won at least Thursday's joint practice? And how did you feel Wednesday went out of everything
you've seen? Well, you know, for me, it's never about, like, those joint practices are kind of like scrimmages in high school or college, you know, the Saturday afternoon scrimmages in college. It's more about, like, because of the situational stuff and taking context with, like, red zone and things like that, it's hard to really pick a winner. But competitive-wise, the physicality, the toughness, the grit, the kind of everything that, you know, people have been asking for the Browns, it was there. So, yeah, that Thursday afternoon when they went live and they had like three good team sessions, especially those last two team sessions. I thought both sides of the ball, the Browns held their own. The defensive line was very dominant. Obviously, the Eagles have a really good defensive line, but the Browns front seven absolutely controlled the Eagles front. I know the Eagles had Dickerson out and a couple guys out, but that front seven, the Browns defensive front is going to travel well, and they're going to have a very big year. Very, very aggressive front.
All right, Lance, I got to ask you, I don't know if you saw the Tom Pelissero report come out about an hour ago, but he said that Shador basically not going to play in this game, but the Browns were cautiously optimistic that he'd be back next week and potentially for their preseason finale against the Rams. Hey, would that surprise you, given an oblique injury, that it would be that quick of a turnaround that he'd be ready to go?
Well, yeah, especially since he's a torque thrower, right? He's a guy who really uses his whole body. He's not just an arm thrower like a Josh Allen. He uses his whole body, if you think of like Baker Mayfield. So obviously the extent of where is it at, high or low, there's a lot of different things with those obliques. So I think it obviously must not be that serious. But if he's able to play next week, it tells you it's not that serious because of the fact that he uses that whole body, especially that upper body when he's transferring his weight. I'd be shocked if he's not 100%. When they bring him back, I don't think there'll be any, if he has any type of soreness or any type of like holdback in how he feels, I don't think he'll play at all. So if he does play, it tells everybody that he's 100%.
Lance, you played the position, you've played with guys. Does it feel abnormal for a guy to come back that fast, even if it is a super minor injury? Does it feel like that'd be something that would linger farther into starting next week, getting back to training camp?
Well, once again, I think it's, you know, Jake, it's where is it at? And, like, how much does it hurt when he's, especially when he's, if you think about him, you know, as he's throwing the ball, getting from his right side to his left side. And when you get, you know, a thrower like Shador, when he's getting from his right to his left side, he's using his entire body. So if you think about his hips going from parallel to kind of perpendicular, where he's really rotating those hips, that's where that oblique and that torque can really hurt those side muscles on the, you know, on the side of the stomach. So it would be, the only thing is how severe is it? I know some of those times, you know, anytime you get those rotational type muscles that hurt, they can, sometimes they feel worse than they are. And sometimes they're worse than they really are. You're thinking you're okay. I just think that he, you know, with those type of injuries, they can kind of progress and get worse and kind of become nagging if you don't take care of them. It's like a hamstring, right? It's a slow process, but I think they got to make sure he's 100% healthy because of the fact he's not just an arm thrower. He uses his whole body. If he's just an arm thrower, it's okay because you're not using as much torque, but he's going to use that whole torque. So he's going to be 100% healthy before he comes back. I'd be shocked otherwise.
All right, Lance, looking forward here to tomorrow's preseason game. We don't know for sure that Dylan Gabriel is going to play, but it does feel like signs are pointing in that direction. If he's out there, what would you expect to see from him?
I expect him to be, I think Dylan Gabriel has a lot to offer. You know, I think the success, the thing you would like to see him do for me, for example, is Shador got an opportunity, right? And he took advantage of that opportunity. He made some really good throws in his first start with the Browns, and they kept it simple, and he did a really nice job with his footwork and his ability to operate. So it starts with this thing, kind of the fundamentals, right? Can he operate the offense? Can he get in and out of the huddle? Can he make sure they minimize penalties? Can they make sure that they're moving? They've been doing a lot of motions and shifts to try to create a clear window for the quarterbacks. Can he do all those things in a smooth manner? Can he get him in and out of the huddle? And then once again, the bottom line is, can you, I've said this for a couple of days now, is that, last couple before they left for Philly, he struggled a little bit with his accuracy. In fact, he had a couple of days he really struggled with his accuracy. So you want to make sure he's hitting those layups, right? Those easy 5-yard outs, those checkdowns, making sure that he's allowing the offense to get into second and manageable, because that'll only help him. If I think Dylan Gabriel and Shador and all these guys struggle on this offense if it's second and 10, because then that defense kind of dictates what they want to do with blitzes and coverages. So once again, for me, it comes down just like with Sanders, operation. Can he make the throws when they're available? Can he hit the layups? And just kind of that tempo and pace. You felt that Shador Sanders was in control. Same kind of thing when you're watching practice right now in that last two sessions with Joe Flacco. It looks like it's in complete control when Joe's out there. And that's kind of what you want to see from Dylan, just like you saw with Shador last Friday.
So obviously, Lance, I'm not out in Philly. I couldn't see it. I can only go off of what I saw. And if you got people charting passes, it didn't look like Dylan had the best of 2 days while he was out there. What did you see, and what was Philly doing that seemed to make it at least more difficult?
Well, it's like the run game. Everybody talks about the run game. So the Browns defensive tackles are as good as it gets in the NFL, and they're penetrators. And then the Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis are just huge humans. So the run game was a little bit skewed. I'm looking forward to see when they go against teams that don't have the elite D tackles like these two teams do. For Dylan Gabriel, the thing about the throws and the throws being charted and things, like, there's no context. There's no context in terms of what situational, is it third down situation? Is it end of game? Are they doing, we got to go get a field goal, so throw the ball away if you need to. There's a lot of situational stuff, and I think there has to be some context. If a quarterback in camp throws 4 touchdowns, but all those touchdowns were from the 5-yard line because they were in red zone, there's no context there. Now, I will say this. The bottom line is that he has not been super accurate, and that's kind of one of his calling cards. And that's one of the things I was very high on him coming out of, especially his last year at Oregon, is that ability to be accurate at all levels, finding those lanes to throw. He's not been accurate. So he's going to have to be very accurate when the lights are on. And I think more importantly, just like with Shador, is that what can you do? I don't really want to judge him until it's actually live action. Cause even though they were live, those quarterbacks don't get hit in practice. So it'd be nice to see him out there when it's the real stakes. If you hold on to the ball, you get drilled. If you throw a bad pass, you get intercepted. Because a lot of times that doesn't happen in practice, just because everything's scripted and down to a T. So I just want to see him, before I kind of make any judgment, I just see him go out there and play and see how he handles himself when there's live bullets flying around, and see how he does in that atmosphere.
LanceRiseCleveland.com with us here on the Fan Hotline. Lance, obviously the Shador injury, unfortunate, because we were looking forward to seeing both of these guys play in a game, but how much does it feel like there's still movement to be made heading into week one in the Browns quarterback room, and how much does Saturday dictate that?
I don't think there's, I think everything is, for me, everything is kind of over. I think the last 30 minutes of, in Philly kind of answered it for me. Joe Flacco is by far the best quarterback the Browns have right now on their roster. And for me, it's not even close, because of experience, but making the throws too. And for me, Joe Flacco gives this offense the best chance to win. And I still think when you have Myles Garrett, when you have Joe Bitonio, Denzel Ward, when you have these guys, winning has to be the most important thing. And obviously the development part, that's going to be on Kevin and his staff, but winning has got to be the most important thing. And Joe Flacco has been, he was just outstanding in that last 30 minutes or so on Thursday, but he's been really good all camp with his fundamentals, his footwork, and just kind of that poise you get with a, you know, an 18-year vet. So I think what, for me, it gives a little bit more stability. If Joe Flacco is a starter, then you can do what you need to do with these guys behind in terms of who are you keeping, how are you going to develop them, what are they going to get, how many reps are they going to get in practice, things like that. But, you know, as you get past Philly, I've always, you know, I've said this kind of in the beginning of the summer, it's time to start preparing for Cincinnati now, and your job is to win games. It's not to see how, where we can be in week six or things like that. As a coach, I'm thinking Cincinnati, you know, if Kevin's bosses tell him he's got to do certain things, great. But if not, your job is to go beat Cincinnati. Nothing else matters except beating Cincinnati, you know, week one. So that's what I think Joe Flacco gives them. And for me, I would be shocked if he wasn't named the starter, you know, tomorrow, Monday, or, you know, in the next couple of days, because that's how dominant he was, you know, that last half hour of practice in Philly.
What about between the two rookies? Does it feel like Dylan can do anything in this game to either solidify his stance as either the number two or number three where the Browns are going to put it, or if he plays well or plays poorly, that he could play himself almost out of that? And I guess attached along with it, and I'll do the thing that I shouldn't do and ask you two questions at once. But if Shador was healthy, would that change anything?
You know, I think, but once again, I said, I think they're both getting a little bit too much criticism, a little bit too much praise when things go right. You know, Shador's success should motivate Dylan, and hopefully it does. I thought Shador, you know, football is a game of you get a chance, go take the, you know, do the best you can with your opportunity. And Shador did that. You'd like to see that with Dylan. I don't think, for me, I can't judge Dylan until I see him in the same situation that Shador is in. You know, Shador produced with minimal reps and did a really nice job and looked like he could handle himself. But then there's going to be steps to it, because now people have film on him and they're going to take things away from him, and he's going to have to continue to progress. So you'd like to see these guys both be in live action and then kind of see where it lies, right? So I've always said Shador's success or failure shouldn't have any kind of relevance on what is going on with Dylan in the other way as well. They're both kind of in their individual battles, kind of fighting through some of the things they have to do in terms of where they were picked and some of their skill sets and, you know, the understanding of footwork from underneath center or whatever it may be. There's so many things those guys are learning. I think the idea of Joe being the starter, and it kind of gives these guys, and Kenny Pickett's been sharp in the 7-on-7. So, you know, in the perfect world as a coach, you're thinking, I got two veterans that can hold it down, and hopefully we're winning games because that's the most important. And then you can do what you need to do with these two rookies in their development. And whatever that development is, from footwork to understanding to processing, all the millions of things that the quarterbacks have to go through, I think them not having to be the guy right away would really help their development, because we all know when you start a quarterback too early, sometimes it can really damage them in the future.
Lance Reisland with us here on the hotline. Lance, let's step away from quarterback for a second. And I want to ask you a little bit about Isaiah Bond. We'll put the off-the-field stuff off the field for right now and take it out of the conversation. But the player in general, I don't know how much you've watched of him, but of what you've seen, what have you sort of taken away? Is Mary Kay's reporting that he's on a flight right now, basically, to sign by Sunday with the Browns?
Well, he's a guy, you know, he's a late day one, day two kind of talent when in terms of traits, right? So he's for me, when I had him on my list, and I had him fairly high on my list in the top 20, and here's why. First of all, he can flat out run. So not only is he track fast, but he's football fast. So he gets to top speed when you watch him very, very fast. However, he is very raw. And when you're very raw, sometimes that can have two impacts. One is at the catch point. Are you smooth with the ball at the catch point? Sometimes he can be a little off on that just because he's such a raw athlete. And then ability to get off the line of scrimmage in the NFL. When you're just a great athlete like he is, and he's a really, really good athlete, elite athlete, you can just rely on your athleticism. That won't work in the NFL. You have got to be technically sound and work angles and work leverage and blind spots. So he's got a big learning curve, but he has the skills that you can't teach. The things that here, you know, if people are like, what do coaches see in him? Well, the things that you can fix, you know, you can fix with him. The things that you can't with an athlete, you know, the athleticism, the raw speed, he has those things. So I think, you know, coaches see Stefanski and those guys see him as kind of like a ball of clay where they can kind of get him where they need him to be because he's such a talented guy. He's going to have to work on getting in and out of routes. He's going to have to work on separation. He's going to have to work on those minor details that he didn't have to do at Texas. He didn't have to do, he was the guy to clear it for Golden, who was their kind of their guy. But one thing he's going to bring right now, he's going to bring elite speed to that room and hopefully kind of spread that field a little bit. And I think that'll be his initial kind of help to the offense is just being a guy who can vertically get down the field to make sure that secondary is not squatting on short routes.
So, Lance, with the talent that you've seen out of him, does it feel like there's no question here if he gets signed, he's making the roster by the time they head to week one?
I don't think so, because I think, you know, there's such a – you know, Stefanski's offense is so based on structure and being a part of that structure. So, no, I think he's going to have to come in and he's going to really work because, you know, obviously Deontay Johnson's very good. I thought been very good. I think Jamari Thrash has been very good. Now, how many receivers they keep, but I also know that they've done so many different things with Harold Fannin. Keeping four quarterbacks. So there's some different dynamics to that roster that I'm learning from like guys like Dan Lobby and Tim Bielik and Spencer German, like how many people are they keeping at each position? If they're going to keep four quarterbacks, is it the receiver room, the tight end room? If they're going to be in more 13 personnel, do they keep more tight ends and less, you know, five, six, you don't know how many they're keeping. I don't think it's an automatic slam dunk that he makes the team just because of the fact he's so far behind. And he has some things that fundamentally he needs to work on before he can kind of maximize his talent on the field.
Lance, I want to look at the defense for a second because I know that you've raved about how good you think this defensive front is going to be, the defensive line specifically. And I think you've pinned, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think top five in the NFL you think that they have the potential to be this year?
Absolutely.
As you look at the broader scope of it, obviously the defensive line is strong, but as you go into the entire unit, where do you see sort of the floor and the ceiling for how good this defense is going to be?
Well, it starts with the depth of the front line. So Mason Graham is everything I thought he'd be, especially when the pads went on. He was very, very good in these joint practices against two very good guards in that. Him and Malik Collins constantly in the backfield, running down screens constantly. I mean, just completely what Schwartz would want. Then you got Alex Wright and Isaiah McGuire fighting for the other spot. Cam Thomas, they have so much depth. And then there was a play I heard a couple of people talk. I heard Nathan Zagura the other day. He was right. There was like a 10-play span where Miles would have sacked a quarterback 10 times in a row, like 8 to 10. It was almost laughable how much he was beating the tackles of the Eagles. And then once again, the depth. Now, that depth on the defensive line allows those linebackers to be they don't have to be guys who read everything. They just got to kind of clean up the mess that the defensive line does. And no one does that better right now than Carson Schlesinger. He had 90 solos last year, led the country, and you can see what a good tackler he is. Incredible instincts. If I would say the corners are going to be fine, Newsom's going to be fine, the one area that I would say that they need to really address in the next couple weeks is who's going to be that free safety if Delpit's going to be in the box, and can that free safety create some turnovers and make sure that he's the tackler they need him to be if someone wants to break free? Because, you know, Jake, in that pressure defense, they're going to give up a couple big plays, but you got to make tackles so they're big plays and not touchdowns. So I think it can be an elite defense if that free safety can create some turnovers, whoever that is, Hickman, Kazee, Jenkins, that guy can be productive. This can be a top five defense because that defensive front, football starts and ends up front, and the Browns front seven on the defensive side of the ball is going to keep them in a lot of football games this fall.
Lance, as always, I appreciate you setting aside the time. I look forward to talking to you next week after we see what Dylan Gabriel is and we get ready for Saturday the following week against the Rams and then eventually the season. I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Every Friday will be great.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my friend.
But I did think it was interesting. Like, we asked Lance. I know Lance does extensive work heading towards the NFL draft and looking at these guys. So I figured Isaiah Bond was a good name to ask him about because he's going to be a wide receiver for the Browns. And Lance's response is really interesting on whether or not he thinks he's a lock to make the roster, in which he said no. Like, you still got to go out there and compete, and there's too much happening here just to be able to hand him a roster spot. Now, I'll be honest. Like, I'll be surprised if Isaiah Bond does not make the week one roster. Like, I don't think you bring in a guy, you know, with 2 weeks to go. Not really. I mean, you do have 2 weeks technically with the break in between the final preseason game and the regular season. But, like, you just don't have a ton of time. You got to go out there and figure out, you know, who the guys are going to be here. So if you're going to bring in a guy now, you think either he's a placeholder, we'll see what happens, and if not, like, you kind of brought all of this onto yourself for no reason then. Like, that's the main reason why I think, I don't know that he's a lock, but I think there's a really good chance that he makes it. Because if you're going to take the off-the-field things with Isaiah Bond and take the backlash for it, which, trust me, innocent, guilty, does not matter. Charges dropped. If the charges were still there, well, if the charges were still there, he wouldn't be on a roster. But charges were dropped. Like, there's still the negative connotation, and we've already heard it. Like, Nick reacted yesterday. We talked about it yesterday. The morning show talked about it today. Everything that we've talked about, it hurts the Browns' image to bring in somebody with that, especially when you combo it with Quinshon Judkins and, to a much lesser degree, the multiple speeding tickets that you've suffered already from your team and your players. Like, it's just been negative press on the off the field from the Browns this year. It has been swirling and it has been constant. So you know that you're taking an image hit and people are criticizing you. If you do that and the guy doesn't even make the roster and you took on all that weight, turn around and ask, what for? Like, why even take the hit? Yeah, sure, bring in a guy that's talented. And if he's a second round, fourth round, whatever you want to pin him as, I saw a lot more people making the claim that he was closer to a second rounder than a fourth rounder. And you heard Lance say that he was in this top 20. Like, I just don't think, one, you cut a guy with that type of talent after you sign him. And two, I just don't think you bring all of this on to you. And I heard Nick today on Afternoon Drive. Like, he talked about Isaiah Bond and, listen, he also is up on his ex as well. It just things that he did not think he was great at and was not that great of a prospect. And to a degree, like, yeah, you take a Steve Sarkisian offense at Texas and you make sure the fact that he's the decoy in that offense, the numbers weren't there, the production surely wasn't there, and there were a lot of things that you looked at from, like, the route tree is not diverse, the routes are not crisp. There's a lot of things for him to work on. But he showed good hands and he has good speed. And not just good, like elite level on at least the speed part. I'm not going to go that far on his hands. He's got fine hands. Like, he's got elite level speed. Okay, well, I don't know who else I'm looking at that has elite level traits right now in this offense outside of Jerry Jeudy at the wide receiver position. Deontay Johnson, sure. Cedric Tillman's fine. I'm imagining you're carrying at least four wide receivers in here. And if it's between Isaiah Bond and Jamari Thrash, like Jamari Thrash a lot. Heard he's had a good camp. Might be siding towards Isaiah Bond. And I imagine there's probably a good chance that you take five wide receivers into this thing. And you probably don't cut away from that room. And I don't think that anybody below that level of Jamari Thrash is stopping him from making this roster. But I'll be honest, like, I looked at him and I was much closer to where Lance was on Isaiah Bond than where Nick is on Isaiah Bond. I thought the kid flashed really good potential and had some elite traits. It, like, his combine performance was impressive. Everything that you actually go through and do, that I've seen him do when he's had the opportunity, I thought I was rather impressed with. And again, it's raw. Like, you have a lot of things to work on. But I'm looking at a kid, and if you look at the numbers, they're not going to be there. 500-some yards, we talked about it, decoy. But one of the major things for me was, like, hey, the kid suffered an ankle injury throughout essentially the entirety of his senior year. And then it got worse as he went up against Ohio State, where obviously Texas loses and he has almost no impact on the game. One catch for 8 yards. Like, you flip that around. It's like, okay, when he was healthier, how did Isaiah Bond look? He started the season, albeit these are worse teams, and I know these are worse teams that they were playing, like Colorado State, 5 for 61. He went up against Michigan, 3 catches for 51 yards, 2 touchdowns and 103 yards against UTSA. Like, he was putting up 75-plus yard performances 3 weeks in a row between UTSA, Louisiana Monroe, and then actually Mississippi State, which is like a half-acceptable competition. And he putting up 3 of 51 against Michigan, like, that's fine. It's a good performance for a guy that his main thing is speed, and he's going to be down the field making big type of plays. 3 catches, isn't that all that surprising? But the injury sort of clocks in, and obviously he sees the production go down, but I thought Isaiah Bond had a fine year for the role that he was in. And there's a reason why you're slapping a potential first to second round grade on a kid. I just don't think that type of talent, again, off the field stuff aside, I don't think that type of talent is something that can just be ignored. Like, even the physical traits are just something that I don't want to just put to the side and act like they never happened. And if we look from a pure football perspective, and I understand, again, you can't separate these two things, but if we look at Isaiah Bond, the player, like, the guy's got just pure talent and has a chance to actually be competitive and be productive on this roster. And you got him for close to nothing, or will get him for close to nothing, I should say. The deal's not done, but it's going to be done this weekend. Like, you're basically getting him. You didn't have to use a draft pick for a guy that had a first to second round grade on him. Any team was going to pretty much jump at that opportunity. We talked about it yesterday. If the Browns don't sign Isaiah Bond, guess who does? Some other team in the NFL is taking that chance immediately. That guy is not just sitting along in the NFL and then getting blackballed from the NFL and never playing again. It's not like the Browns are this one team. It's the same thing, but to a much lesser degree, and I want to make that very clear, is like Deshaun Watson. You can get mad they hand him $230 guaranteed million dollars. But if the Browns weren't going to do it, somebody else is going to hand him some lucrative contract to go play football. They were not the only team interested.
Miami was super interested. They were the front runners for most of that that run for Watson. Browns weren't even an actual
No, they got contender. Ruled out. Yeah, they got ruled out until they slapped $230 million. You get every single penny on the table. It was Miami. Atlanta was in that conversation. There were other teams. Everybody, not everybody,
Pittsburgh,
but a lot of teams.
Was rumored at 1.2.
There were a lot of teams interested in taking on Deshaun Watson. The same way, again, like, teams were going to take on Isaiah Bond. And, I mean, to a much lesser degree, the charges got dropped on Isaiah Bond, and there was one. Deshaun Watson, at that point, there was like 22 or 23.
I'm sure with Bond, probably around half the teams in the league were interested in him. And the other half probably just didn't have room for a wide receiver that they wanted to take a chance on in camp. Were they probably happy with their wide receiver room?
Like, again, this is just the way the NFL plays out. I just don't think if you're the Browns, again, I don't agree with taking on all these guys. I don't know that you're necessarily the right team to do it, but I mean, are you just going to let a talented guy walk to the other side of the league or walk to a team in division for crying out loud? I mean, Ravens always need wide receiver help. God knows the Steelers probably wouldn't be that far off of making a call for a guy
Cincinnati
like that.
Cincinnati would love to have another guy with little to no money on his contract.
Him and Jermaine Burton on the same team for a second time. They played college ball together. Him and Jermaine Burton on the same team would be that's something.
Which place? Because he was at two schools, Bond, no?
I believe so. I
wanted, was at Texas. Was he not at Alabama?
He was at Alabama with Tommy Rees.
I want to say Burton and Bond were on the same. I want to say they were teammates at some point in their career.
When I hear Tommy Rees, it throws me off every time.
Why does that?
Because
they were teammates at Alabama in the 2022-2023 season. I'm not crazy.
I swear Tommy Rees was a quarterback for like 14 years at Notre Dame.
I can't confirm or deny. He played.
I've seen him play so many times at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, he played at Notre Dame. I don't know how long he was the quarterback there, but he played.
I think it may have been from like 12 to...
Let's see if you can nail it, Dom. 12 to 16? Is that what you're going for?
Was it 12 to 16? It was not 12 to 16.
No.
Because what year were they in the national title? 12? He was there in 2000. He was there from...
Come on,
I want to say...
Nail it.
10... To 13.
On the head.
Yeah!
Tommy Rees, 2010 to 2013 on Notre Dame. Look at that. Look at that bald-knower Dom Flaherty.
Because he was the closer in that undefeated year. I knew it.
Well, Ohio State fans weren't going to be very happy about that. But
is there a lot of that I don't remember?
2012, not allowed to compete in the national championship.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, definitely. That popped back up with the Michigan stuff, which we'll get into later on in the show. But again, Isaiah Bond is a guy that you are going to go out and just... teams are going to sign him. Again, you don't have to like the off-the-field stuff and the stuff that comes attached to it. And again, I'll refer you back to Mary Kay Cabot's point that they are not expecting the NFL to come down with a suspension on this. Like, the talent is there, and the Browns need talent in the wide receiver room. They made the move, and to me, it's undeniable. I think the kid's got talent. 216-474-0092. Isaiah Bond, a lock to make the roster. And whether you like it or not, in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. We've talked plenty of Browns up to this point, and coming up in 17 minutes, we're going to get you to get a grip, as we always do, at 9 o'clock. But I thought it was interesting. We talked a little bit at the end of the night last night about NBA schedule release. The Cavs had their schedule in front of them, and what was the most, I think, concerning for people, or the most like eye-opening to people, was seeing the Cavs on Rivalry Week. NBA Rivals Week, taking on the Charlotte Hornets. A team that I think the entirety of Cleveland looks around and goes, I don't really give a damn about the Hornets. That doesn't feel like a rivalry at all. And again, like I painted out the picture, clearly they're trying to match up in the ball versus ball experiment there, which is a terrible decision. If you think Lonzo and LaMelo are both going to be healthy when that game rolls around, I mean, you're trying to throw a dart at a board from 600 feet away left-handed. Like, that is a just absolute far and just far-fetched idea that they're both going to be healthy. But sure, you throw me that one, I'll take it, I'll listen to you. You tried to make something work with the Cavs, who naturally don't have like a rivalry that sticks out in people's head necessarily. But I could have thought of several other teams that I'd rather see the Cavs play on NBA Rivalry Week.
Let's be honest. There's only one true rivalry in the NBA outside of like your city rivalry. It's the Lakers and it's the Celtics. Anything outside of that can change year in and year out, or really era-wise. Like the Knicks and the Heat, not rivals. The Knicks and the Pacers, historically rivals and current rivals. I would even say the Knicks and the Cavs are rivals right now.
So that was kind of my point. It's like I'm looking at this and like they're trying to make a rivalry happen. But like if nobody feels like the rivalry is in the like play the Lakers and Celtics at that point. If you want to play the Knicks and the Heat at that point or the Knicks and the Pacers, like I'll take that. The teams don't like each other, whatever. But like if you're not going to have true set rivalries like you have in the NFL, like there's naturally born rivalries in the NFL where teams, not really to this point, but like quote unquote, don't like each other. Like, I think you still see that between Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Those teams generally don't like each other, although it depends year to year.
There's a handful in the NFL that are to the next level.
Yeah. And clearly college football. I mean, they didn't get me started. Rivalries are,
that's the best. Cause why would I care about Akron and Kent? Well, they don't like each other. Yeah, that's the best part.
Only reason to turn into the wagon wheel. These two teams kind of hate each other.
It's like, I'm biased here, but like, Pitt, West Virginia, that game means nothing. It meant something once. It means nothing. But boy, is it fun to watch. Oh, is it exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you get a ton of, like, games that don't necessarily mean anything that I think people still pay a ton of attention to. Like, across, even if it's SEC football, like, I mean, if we're being 100% honest, most years the Iron Bowl means absolutely close to nothing other than the fact of...
Boy, is it fun.
But the two teams generally hate each other and you like it. So it's like, but I'm looking at the Cavs. It's like, in the NBA, don't try to sell me Cavs-Hornets as a rivalry. Because, one, historically, I don't think anybody looks at that and goes, that's a rivalry. And two, it's not going to be a competitive game if things play out the way that they should. Like, those two teams are not going to be anywhere near each other in the standings.
I understand if Charlotte falls under the category of like, oh, we don't really know who to pair them with. But the Cavs, whether you like it or not, are one of your premier teams in the NBA. And other than the few years after LeBron and when he left initially, they have been since 04. Like, this team, the Cavs have been relevant maybe despite, what, 6 years in that span?
Yeah, maybe a couple more, but not too far off.
Yeah, around that, they've been one of your premier teams. They've been competitive. They've been to multiple championships, and they won a title. You can't just put them in a throwaway game because the MLS does this, right? You have really exciting games on the rivalry week, and then there's a few where it's like, yeah, I don't think the Houston Dynamo actually care about playing Miami, right? Like, who cares? It's the same situation. They just threw games together because they're like, well, the Lakers and the Celtics, I'm assuming, are playing that day. I think that you can't have that as a throwaway game. You got to have the Cavs playing the Celtics, the Sixers, the Pacers, or the Knicks. It got to be one of those teams.
Yeah, like, throw me one of those. I'll throw in the Orlando Magic in there, too.
Orlando's a great one.
Because yeah. Orlando's going to be good again this year, and those two teams hate each other.
You can put together a dialogue of LeBron leaving for the Heat and then leaving the Heat for Cleveland. Those two places don't like each other. You had multiple media companies fighting each other and putting billboards in other areas, making fun of the... Like, the towns are completely different. They don't like each other. The teams cannot like... You could build that, but no. Let's play the Hornets.
Yeah, like, if you're going to put... And I get it. Like, if everybody has to play somebody, you can make games that don't matter be the Hornets versus the Brooklyn Nets. Like, two teams that are just going to be absolute trash. Might be a competitive game because you got trash against trash, but... Let's be honest, like, if you're going to have throwaway games, those are the throwaway games. Take two teams at the bottom of the standings, act as if there's some kind of rivalry that you can paint there, and just make it happen. Like, find a way, find something that makes sense to you, and pair those teams together. I just don't know how the Cavs end up with the Hornets. And what I want to ask you guys, at 216-474-0092, who do you feel that the Cavs' biggest rival actually is? Because... I think you could have made this week really fun. Like, as I stand here and I look at it right now, and I think you do in the NBA have to take, like, the current year into account. Like, I think the Celtics are up on there, but the Celtics might be the Cavs' biggest rival right now, it feels like. But the Cavs are not the Celtics' biggest rival because you, again, have other pairings there that make a lot more sense.
None of this makes sense. This schedule for rivalry week doesn't make sense. So Spurs-Houston makes sense. Lakers-Nuggets.
Well, the Nuggets have eliminated the Lakers a couple times in the last couple of years.
Who cares? I don't care if they beat them with bats. That's not a rivalry. Like, Cavs-Hornets.
Ball brother versus ball brother is what they're trying to paint to you.
Who cares?
I would agree. I would fully agree. Who cares? But, and like, both guys probably won't be healthy. Like I said, like, it does not matter. Like, I can see Lakers-Nuggets. Like, again, the Nuggets have eliminated the Lakers. None of these makes sense. They've played 7-game series. Like, that's perfectly fine. Like, I think that one... Like, there's some bad blood there where the teams genuinely do not like each other.
But, like...
But just throw me anybody else, Dom. Throw me anybody else. Just don't give me the... Like, I would love to see a rivalry game where I'm taking on the Orlando Magic, and the sell is so damn easy.
And the Magic are not playing in this week. For these games, they're not playing. But there are two teams playing twice during Rivals Week. At the start and in the middle of it, you have Houston playing the Spurs and then playing the Pistons. One of those is a rival. The other one, it can't be. They didn't play in the finals together.
I'm trying to think of what the sell is on that game.
They did early on in the 2000s, right?
You could 100% be right. I don't have the finals matchups memorized in my head.
Or they didn't. I have no idea.
Early 2000s was before I was born, so.
You were born in the early 2000s.
Close. I wasn't paying attention to basketball in the early 2000s. Let's be real about it. Early 2000s, I was maximum 4 years old.
At heart, you're a 1999 baby with me. But like Lakers Clippers, that's a good one to have, right? Two aging teams trying to open up a win. But like, why do the Timberwolves and the Warriors hate each other? Like, I get they've had like some playoff dramatics, but like, other than like last year, what's the history?
But okay, this is a thing though. I'm fine if you go off of last year. Because again, like you said, there's not long-standing rivalries that exist in the NBA, which is one, why I think we can all agree Rivalry Week is a big-ass sham. Like, this is just a sham for the NBA to try to get national games that people they think are going to want to care about, but you're just trying to put good games together and then randomly sprinkle in some garbage games alongside of it. But like, the whole point of this would be find two teams that don't like each other, even if it's just last year, and the two fan bases got into it, and the two teams played a close series that was, you know, it was testy, and the players got into it, maybe you had an ejection, maybe you just had a couple of scrums, whatever it took. Like, it is the easiest sell. Orlando's not playing in this. Why? Because I can tell you right now, Cavs fans do not like the Magic right now, and Magic fans do not like the Cavs right now. They hate each other. Easy sell. Cavs, Knicks. I mean, you put anybody against the Knicks right now, they're probably not going to be very big fans of them because they're New York, unless it's like an LA team. But like, and they still won't be fans of them. They'll just big market. But like, Cavs can't stand the Knicks. You've played in a playoff series in the last couple of years in which the lights were too bright. Knicks fans made fun of Cavs fans. Cavs fans got heated. And like, you could sell something there. Celtics, easy sell, even though I think there's a lot more better, probably the like, combinations you could put the Celtics with, and that's fine.
Or Orlando, I think, is the best one.
Yeah.
Because you have that playoff series 2 years ago where
you're gonna
it
have
ended
a guy,
being competitive.
You're going to have a guy with the last name Wagner on the back of his jersey. That enough is going to rile up Cavs fans. Even if Mo still isn't out there because he's dealing with an injury, which I imagine will probably be better than mine, but I don't know. Like, Franz will be out there. Like, Wagner on the back of the jersey is just going to piss off Cavs fans. To no end. It's such an easy sell, and I don't get it. Like, if I had to pick a rival that I think is your biggest rival right now, I truthfully do think it's Orlando. Like, as weird as it is, like, in terms of you just actually hate that team and you're getting competitive games, and go back, there was a national televised game against the Magic. Was that not a close game last year? Am I remembering that wrong? I want to say they played a national game where it was another close battle, which the Cavs just played terrible offensively. But, like, give me that all day long. Like, if you're going to give me a close game with, by the way, budding NBA stars, you get Evan Mobley versus Paolo Banchero. Like, what more do you need? Instead, you're giving me LaMelo Ball, who might sell it to the teenagers and younger of the game of, like, I want to watch LaMelo play on national television. Guess who else does? Nobody. Nobody wants to see the Hornets play basketball.
Now, what they could have done is they could have actually freed up Knicks and Sixers, right? Keep the Knicks in that spot, move the Sixers to that Wednesday slot with the Cavs, and put the Hawks with the Knicks. I mean, you could have even put Brooklyn, but that wouldn't have been a good game. But you put the Hawks there. The Hawks, people are raving about the Hawks this year and their offseason moves. The Knicks, people are still confused about what that team is. Again, Knicks-Sixers would be a fun game because those two places are close together, proximity, it makes sense. But free the Sixers up, and you, because you can build narrative to that. I know it's not one of the ones we're talking about, and Orlando's the key matchup. Let's say we can't get Orlando. Sixers is a good team to call your rival. They're a state away, really, really far drive, really. But they're a state away. You can sell that to a TV audience. Maybe not to you, because you're kind of... nodding,
yeah,
but
I don't know that the Sixers do it for me just because I just don't feel like there's history, like any history there, not even like long standing history, but just any history other than it's Philly. And I think Philly fans are really hard to get along with most of the time.
They're the worst.
So, well, New York's up there too, but New York fans are at times insufferable.
So, yeah.
And not even at times. And New York fans are insufferable, period.
Yeah, but the Knicks fans make me laugh. I'm sitting as a Knicks fan. At least they're funny when they're excited, when they're sad. Sixers fans are just insufferable no matter what they're doing because when they lose, they're really mean to people.
Yeah, and when they win, they're really mean to people. Welcome to Philly.
It's the worst.
Just how they are. But like, I don't know that I get behind the Sixers one, but it's a better matchup than the Hornets. But right now, I'm looking at the Magic have to be your biggest rival right now, especially for this year. Like, you could paint it as the Knicks because those are the top two teams in the East. I think right behind that, there's no argument for anybody else other than the Magic. Like, you really want to try to give me the Celtics? They've knocked you out of the playoffs. But other than that, I get the two teams don't like each other. No Jason Tatum. Team might not be as good this year. I'd rather not. I'd rather just play either. Give me the Knicks, give me the Magic. I'm fine with either. But the Hornets were not a good sell. All right, let's leave that there. When we come on back here at 9 o'clock, Get a Grip coming your way on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.